Hello and welcome to the Vet Blast podcast. I am your host, Dr. Adam Christman, Chief Veterinary Officer here at Fetch DVM 360.
You know, we have never talked about something that is so important to all of our listeners out there, and that's patient rounds. You're like, what? We didn't? No, we didn't. So I am so excited that we're going to be chatting about what that looks like. Another term that we're going to talk about today, too, is patient handoffs. And with us today is Dr. James Barr, Chief Medical Officer at Blue Pearl Specialty and Emergency Pet Center, Pet Hospital, as well as Dr. Richard Stone, Vice President of Medicine at Blue Pearl Specialty and Emergency Pet Hospital. Welcome, doctors.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here.
Well, we're honored to have you here. And again, really looking forward to it. So to our listeners that aren't familiar with Dr. Barr, Dr. Stone. So Dr. Barr holds an undergraduate and veterinary degree from Louisiana State University.
Go Tigers.
He's a critic list at Florida Veterinary Specialist at Blue Pearl, then left to teach at Texas A&M University in 2009, returning back to Blue Pearl in 2017 to serve a group of medical directors and then chief medical officer. As CMO today, he oversees the medical operations of more than 100 Blue Pearl specialty and emergency practices, supporting more than 1,300 veterinarians nationwide. That's fantastic. Dr. Stone graduated from Texas A&M University in 2004. He was a primary care practitioner for several years prior to pursuing a residency at the University of Georgia. He started with Blue Pearl in 2011 and spent many years as an internist. He supports an amazing team in Houston as medical director and gained appreciation for the work that goes into delivering remarkable care. He took a regional role in 2018 supporting Central Region Hospitals, and he's fortunate to serve as a great group of medical and operation leaders of that role. As of this earlier this year, he moved into the role of Vice President of Medicine for Blue Pearl, and he has a passion for continuous improvement in the delivery care, cultivating a culture of learning for their associates and developing current and future leaderships. So I think that's just fantastic. And I couldn't think of two wonderful, talented individuals to talk about this art of communication with patient rounds. So let's get into it, doctor. So let's begin with communication. You know that this is that kind of soft skill that I know that a lot of veterinary schools are starting to get into a little bit more and more, but it tends to fall by the wayside. So can you just speak a little bit about, you know, what impact communication has on a practice?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, communication is key in any relationship that we have, whether that's professional, personal, or whatever. I think, being able to be clear, concise, communicate what it is on your mind in a way that is that really kind of gets to the heart of what you mean, but also doing it in a way that's really efficient. You know, that's really important for us in our hospitals now that, you know, of course we have, lots of more cases than we've had, ever pretty much, across veterinary medicine. And it's really important that we have that really precise communication. It's important. You know, I know people talk about soft skills, and to me, it's just a skill. I mean, it's as important of a skill as you need to be able to deliver any kind of medicine, whether that's talking to a client or talking to your technicians or talking to the other colleagues that you work with. I mean, you know, these are important things, and we cannot overemphasize how important that is, because, you know, when you look at sort of where mistakes are made oftentimes in care delivery, communication's at the heart of a lot of that, whether that's written or verbal communication. And so, you know, to me, I think it's as essential of a skill as is your technical expertise and being able to treat the patient. So, you know, for me, we can't overemphasize the importance of it.
Yeah, you know, and we're so stressed out sometimes, and I'm sure sometimes it falls by the wayside. So, you know, emphasizing effective communication, collaboration, all those different things, and a positive culture. I think it's so important for communication in my eyes, too, just as a general practitioner, I'm sure. Anything you'd like to add to, Dr. Stone?
You know, I just want to emphasize the importance of communication. And I really appreciate, Jimmy, what you said about it not being a soft skill, but being a skill. You know, when we look at the impact of communication errors on sentinel events, so for everyone, a sentinel event is any sort of unexpected event that results in patient harm or death. If we are to say that 2/3 of sentinel events are caused by a communication error, or at least contributed to by communication errors, that's impactful. It brings to mind this, there was a study done back in 1999 on the human side, to err is human. And basically it was a landmark study that looked at the impact of medical errors on death rates in human hospitals. And if we look at the numbers that were generated then, an estimate of something like 98,000 human deaths related to medical errors, and look at how those estimates have grown. As of 2010, the number was around 180,000. Fourth leading cause of death was medical error. Now, more recently, 250,000 plus deaths a year on the human side related to medical errors. So if we say two-thirds of those sentinel events are related to communication in some capacity, I mean, it's probably as big an intervention as anything we can do to focus on communication.
You know, when I think of when my parents were in the hospital and they had like multiple issues going on, and the way they communicated in their rounds, you had the cardiologist, the oncologist, the internal medicine specialist, they were all there to make sure that everybody was on the same page. And I'm not sure if we see that more. I want to ask you this question too. Do you see this more because you're in a specialty office? Do you feel that more veterinary specialists are doing those kind of rounds that you're seeing similar on the human healthcare? Like, what does that look like to you and how can we improve in this area?
You know, I think, you know, it's inconsistent, Dr. Christman. I think it's one of those things where, you know, a lot of times people have rounds, but they're not structured to be able to deliver the information that is needed in those circumstances. I think oftentimes the rounds are potentially had in segments, right? So you'll have the technicians will maybe round together, or the doctors will round together. The overnight doctors will round with, you know, the transferring other veterinary services, but the technicians aren't, you know, potentially aren't included, or, you know, there are a lot of differences in the different ways in which hospitals will actually perform rounds. And so I think it does happen with more regularity in multidisciplinary rounds, just by the nature of the cases that are there, that they're oftentimes a little more complex, but it doesn't have to be something that's really difficult to be done. You know, the structure that you can add actually makes it easier to be able to pull off and be able to do, makes it more efficient, and you can deliver it very easily. So I think the consistency is something that's, you know, kind of probably lacking across a lot of the, especially emergency spaces.
Yeah, Rich, in your experience as an internist too, have you communicated with like the critic list or an oncologist? Do you feel like that's heading in the right direction? Or are we lacking in that area in vet med?
My experience has been largely positive in this area. And as an internist and as a veterinarian in general, the consistency of how we share information and how we deliver information, the repetitive nature of how we do that is so important so that we don't miss things. So I feel like in general, we do a pretty good job of accepting the fact that it is important. It is very important to hand off the necessary information to continue care. I agree, though, with Jimmy's statement that there is inconsistency in how that approach is taken, right? And which methodology we use. And that really leads into this larger initiative that we've kicked off, where we're launching this patient handoff, or this rounds process in a more standardized, more consistent fashion across our over 100 practices, right? And it's an area of opportunity, I would say, for any hospital. I mean, we already provide remarkable care. We know that. Mm-hmm. Is there always room to improve? Of course there is. You know, we all live in a place of continuous improvement. And based on some of the statistics that we shared earlier with respect to what communication impacts in human medicine, we know that even small incremental improvements in communication, in the structure of communication, how consistently we do it, can make big impacts in the delivery of care in the veterinary space.
And just to add on to that, Richard, I mean, you know, when you think about the efficiency in which you can transmit information in that way, you know, it actually can save a fair amount of time during the day where you can kind of get everyone together, get everyone aligned on what the goals are of a case, and then being able to efficiently talk about and make decisions in that moment. You know, and that has ramifications for everybody's day, you know, that could, you know, translate to increased quality of life for people. But, you know, it also builds camaraderie in the culture of learning and training within the hospitals as well.
Very good. You know, I think of when you have these ER cases that come in and you got to like hand them off too. Sometimes they have to go be transferred either the ortho, opto, whatever it is. You know, there's a lot of departments that happen. And then me as a general practitioner that sends something over, we kind of have to be within that loop of communication so that we're aligned with the pet parent too. I was reading something that is it iPass that Blue Pearl has? Is that the initiative? Talk to me a little bit more about that, Rich.
Sure, glad to. So to give everyone a little bit of background, back in, I believe it was 2010, this iPass communication strategy or handoff bundle was created. There was 11 different academic institutions on the human side that studied this handoff bundle, this rounds technique called IPASS in a pediatric setting. And what they found was by using this structured format, and we'll dig into what the IPASS mnemonic means here in a moment, but by using that structured format, they were able to reduce the number of medical errors by 28%.
Wow.
28%. That is a profound number. When we think about how we just scrap every day to find that newest innovation on the medical side that will just give us a little bit more improvement in quality of care. We all do that as veterinarians. But 28%, that is a profound impact, right? Unbelievable. So now if we think about that, what is IPASS? What is this? It is, as I said, it's a structured format for delivering medical information between healthcare providers, right? It's rounds, but in a very specific way. And just to get into the details of it very quickly, and we can dig in as far as you'd like on this, IPASS stands for Illness Severity, Patient Summary, Action List, Situational Awareness, and then Synthesis by Receiver. And really, if you follow through that, basically what is happening is, in the most efficient manner possible, we are transmitting the most critical information we can about each patient in a way that is predictable. So we know what's coming, we know what to expect. The format can be done in written format and in verbal format. And then we ensure that closed loop communication, right? When we ask the receiver to synthesize the information, like, okay, tell me what you heard. Are we on the same page? That ensures that we have that shared mental model, which means you're thinking what I'm thinking. We're on the same page with that patient.
That's incredible. So, you know, Jimmy, walk me through the case then. So say, you know, you have a patient that's in there going to transfer to another department. What does that transfer, both information and responsibility, look like when you have this handoff mechanism in play?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and this within our hospitals, this happens hundreds of times a day, right? So this is a very common situation that you have a patient, and we'll use the example of an emergency. You kind of mentioned that earlier, of an emergency case that will come in overnight. You know, there will be the discussion with the owners, you know, a differential list generated, treatment plan, you know, estimates gotten, patients hospitalized, start the process. And then, you know, at some point during the night, you know, they will, the transferring person will actually, you know, kind of fill in the information that would kind of go in those IPASS things. So we'll have like a form in which that can actually be done. And then, at the next morning in rounds, there will be, you know, and first and foremost, rounds need to occur, right? So everyone needs to agree on a time in which that's, you know, the hospital can actually focus some attention. Generally, the easiest time to do it is before appointments start, right? So that's generally 7 or 8 or somewhere in there. At the time, you know, most of our hospitals that do that are probably around 7 o'clock. And so where as many services are within the hospital that would actually be able to receive those cases, that includes other emergency doctors as well, right? So there's transitions between emergency doctors as well. And then you would go through that system and kind of talk through, you know, the case, you know, with the sort of the illness severity, talk about the patient, talk about the things that happened with it, you know, things that actually occurred with the diagnostics that you did, the treatment plan and the effectiveness of that. And then going through that and in a relatively structured way with everybody around, that then allows for that shared mental model. It also allows for perspectives. It also puts it into context of all the other things that are happening within the hospital, right? So it's not just that isolated patient. There's also probably 10 or 15 others that are there at the same time. And that allows for not just transfer of that information, but of the ability to be able to kind of understand where the other person's coming from. It has a lot of benefits when it comes to culturally within the hospitals, relationships between doctors. It allows for, and ultimately that leads to better care. And so at the end of that case, then it's decided upon who would be that case would be transferred to. So whether that's to another emergency doctor, another, you know, a specialty service like surgery in case of, you know, a foreign body or something that needs to have surgery or something like that. So, and then at that moment, that case becomes that person's case, and then they move on with their day and, you know, with knowledge of what happened overnight, and a good solid plan to move forward.
I can envision the quote, like, are you thinking what I'm thinking, Dr. Stone, right? Is that like, you know, I feel like if something's being transferred over and, you know, you say, I think we should do a cardiac ultrasound. Is that what your thought process are? Because with that must come so many great collaborations and ideas that maybe you didn't think of something like that before. Have you experienced that too, Rich?
Absolutely. So if we think about it from that vantage point, the perspectives that others can bring to a case like that can be pivotal. And when we think about multidisciplinary rounds, we're talking about clinicians from very different backgrounds that might hear the same case, see the same case, but bring up a different question when it's time to understand a little bit more about the case, right? And that in turn, I think, helps everyone in that rounds process, in that handoff process, learn. And that's the real value, is not only does it improve the safety for the patient, but it improves the sort of culture of learning and training that you want to have in your hospital for continuous improvement. And I can give you an example, if you'd like, of let's have a fictitious patient that we walk through with this iPass mnemonic to understand how it could go. Let's pick a patient, say, a patient that presents and ultimately we find acute pancreatitis. Now, you could imagine that we could meander through a number of different details about a patient with pancreatitis and what happened and when it happened and so on. And we could spend more time than necessary rounding. If we focus on the pertinent details using, say, this iPass mnemonic, it would sound a little bit something like this. Okay, Fluffy Jones is stable. We're a 12-year-old female spayed mixed breed dog with a working diagnosis of pancreatitis. Pre-existing conditions include hyperadrenal corticism. We're currently on trilastine 10 milligrams BID. No current allergies. Events leading up to admission, Fluffy got in the trash and ingested some garbage. Owners detected that about 24 hours ago. Physical exam revealed tense abdominal. Palpation vitals were unremarkable. Diagnostics included an abdominal ultrasound revealing hyperechoic mesentery around the pancreas. PLI was abnormal. Remainder of the chemistries and the CBC were unremarkable. Thus far, response to treatment including fluid therapy, antiemetics, and analgesics, specifically fentanyl. Response to treatment has been good thus far with improved abdominal comfort. Action plan. No diagnostics to be done tonight. As far as therapeutics, we have weaned down the antiemetics and the analgesics. We want to continue fluids through the night. Communication with the owner has been complete. As far as if-then statements, situational awareness, if pain returns, please restart fentanyl. Do you have any questions? Now, if we look at how long that took to present that case, all the pertinent information was provided, right? It probably got done in, what, about a minute? So you can sort of do the math on that and imagine in any of your hospitals, if you have 5, 10, 20 cases in the ICU, right, that you need to work through, or you've got even just one case that you need to hand off at the end of a long day, if you use that structure again and again, you can transmit all the pertinent information that you need to in a relatively compressed period of time and make sure that patient's continuity of care is present.
I love that. Like you nailed it. You gave the high-level overview. If I wanted to know more of the specifics of what the dosage was of fentanyl that you got, I can go to the medical record to read that up or whatever.
Right.
But this is just enough, you know, of a good synopsis of a clip note version so that way we're aligned to move forward. And I'm assuming that this should probably be done in more of like a quieter location so that way we can focus. And the listener has to be more of an active listener, I would assume too, right?
Yeah, of course. I mean, you know, ideally this is, it's off the floor, right? You know, there's a lot of distractions that happen off the floor, but you know, I wouldn't let the location get in the way of actually doing the thing, you know, making sure that you do rounds. If you, you know, there's some practices. I mean, I think probably most veterinary practices, you know, or they don't have a lot of extra space. And right. So, you know, a lot of times this is done in the treatment room. You know, when walking around in, you know, cage side, and that's okay. Just as long as you can be focused on that, because that active listening is a pretty important part, because there's going to be questions that come up in their mind of like, you know, hyperechoic mesentery, you know, what, you know, are you sure that, you know, was there any fluid there? Right. Did you sample that fluid? You know, what did it look like? I mean, you know, these are questions that can kind of come up that would yield a lot of really good discussion. But I mean, if you just listen to Richard present that case, I mean, that was an enormous amount of information, right? I mean, that amount of information, we've all been in rounds before where it's just been, you know, that amount of information took about 10 minutes to actually talk about, right? To go through. And so this is a way in which you can really package that up and get good communication. I mean, you have a really good feeling. I mean, I'm just hearing that case. I mean, I'm a criticalist. I mean, I can understand exactly where to go on that case and where, you know, how things are set up.
Yeah. Dr. Stone, I'm thinking of that case again too, and thinking like of other individuals that would be hearing that. You must have, I would probably tote them as something like as a pilot leader, you know? You gotta have like the leader. I'm sure you have maybe like an influential clinician leader, a nurse leader. What does that look like in terms of the ones that are around and listening to what you just said?
You're getting into a good topic, and that is implementation science, which is how do you do this? How do we make this thing become a reality in our hospital? So for your listeners, if they're thinking, you know, rounds sound great. I do something sort of like rounds. However, I want to do it in a more structured way. I want to have that protected time. How do I make this happen? Well, it is very true that anytime you're going to do any sort of change management, any sort of implementation in your hospital, you need to have that core team, that champion team that can help you carry it across the finish line. So of course, we want to be able to emphasize the importance of this. And I think that's very easy to do when we talk about the statistics. We talk about how impactful communication is in medicine in general, right? We know it's impactful. So we can really generate interest just by showing how much this can improve the care of patients, because that's why we show up to work, right? But you still have to have that core team that helps, that talks to the rest of the hospital about why this is important, that explains to the rest of the team why we don't want interruptions during this time unless it is truly an emergency, that helps the team understand that this structure is important, because, you know, we're all going to want to go a little rogue and do our own thing. But, you know, if we can stick to this particular program in that hospital, modified to what works for that hospital, if everyone is on the same page, we're going to get more consistency, which leads to better outcomes, right? And I will say, when we think about how to implement anything, but in particular, a rounds process like this, this handoff initiative, the most likely area where it's going to fail is in that implementation phase or in sustainment. So when you're trying to implement it, if you haven't properly socialized it, you don't have that champion team that's there to help with rounds each day. That person, you have one person every day that can be there and say, all right, guys, it's time to do rounds. And then we're going to use the format. We're going to talk through it. You got to have someone to be able to do that, right? So someone on that champion team. So you've got to form a champion team from the beginning. And then in sustainment, it's very easy to see something like this as being flashy. Okay, it's exciting. We're going to do it real quick. Like every New Year's resolution ever, right? We're going to do this. And then a couple of months later, you're not doing it anymore. So that same champion team can help you with sustainment by encouraging people and really highlighting those small wins.
Yeah, highlight the small wins. I love that. And, you know, Dr. Barr, the ultimate end goal of this project, one of the things I'm thinking of when you're just talking about this too, Rich, is like, you know, this has got to help minimize some of the issues that our profession's facing, a little bit of the burnout, compassion fatigue, whatever you want to call it. I feel like this communication has got to help enhance that, right, Dr. Barr?
Yeah. I mean, I think we have to constantly remember that our profession is a veterinarian with a patient, with a client in front of them that they're responsible for, and to support them through that with a technician that actually helps us deliver that. Everything that we do, that Richard and I do to support our hospitals, helps to support that relationship and that thing. You know, for me, communication has, and specifically patient handoff rounds, has so many different benefits for a hospital and a care delivery team. You know, it's not just the fact that you can deliver efficient quality care that has very few mistakes of these unintended things that actually occur. That's an important part, you know, and in fact, like when we're sort of coming up with this idea to sort of deliver, it came out of our medical quality group, right? But it has so many other benefits, like improving relationships between people that work there, right? Having a formal understanding of each other and their perspectives on cases, and understanding of why it's important that, and I'll pick on the internist because we have one on the call here, why internists want urine before fluids are started, right? So you know, it's there's things that are kind of important to people because it helps decision-making down the road. And there's also some sort of grace at a moment in which, you know, if you're taking a case from an emergency doctor overnight, and this was one of 15 cases, well, the fact that they didn't actually grab the urine before they went on fluids, you know, that's going to be okay. We're going to be able to sort of manage through that and be able to work through it. You can kind of gain perspectives of each other. And ultimately, that is important for the culture of the hospital. You know, so from my perspective, I think how people relate and work with each other, it has direct impacts on patient care. It has, I mean, that's a real thing. I mean, and communication between those services about the patient is equally as important. And so our goal for this are all of the above of kind of what I just said, you know, because I think that it will ultimately lead to us being able to help to foster that relationship between the veterinarian and the patient and the client and the technicians and the care delivery team that are part of that. And you know, one of our key stakeholders, one of the folks that we work with and we think is part of our team is our primary veterinarians as well. Right. So, but, you know, you can kind of think about that in your own setting and how that can help you. It'll help your day go better. It'll help everybody be aligned. And we know that this is more important than that, or this needs to happen before that. And so technicians can get their workflow together. Right. So there's a lot of benefits from it.
Yeah, a lot of benefits. And, you know, I know we were talking about just contributing to attrition, burnout of veterinary professionals. This is certainly going to help with that, too. I think that sometimes when you have so many different specialty areas, Dr. Stone, in a practice, you tend to be siloed. And so I feel like when you have this ability to cross-communicate with one another, just like you were talking about, too, Dr. Barr, the fact that collaboration, friendships, you feel more empowered, better culture. Have you felt like that, too?
Absolutely. I've got to echo what Jimmy said. I mean, culture is ultimately what we cultivate.
Yeah. Right?
Culture is what we cultivate. And this rounds opportunity, this interface of healthcare providers handing off the care of a patient, which is such an important thing, that's fertile ground for cultivating the types of relationships, the respectful, psychologically safe relationships that we need to ensure adequate care, remarkable care for our patients. It's fertile ground. And so I would say, irrespective of general practice, emergency practice, specialty practice, when it comes to people sharing ideas that result in better care for patients, that is an area worth investing in. So I would say anything we can do to improve the rounds process in any of our hospitals is time well spent.
Well said, my friends. Well said. Well, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much, Dr. Richard Stone and Dr. James Barr or Jimmy Barr for your insight and expertise. Can we learn more about this initiative at BluePearlVet.com?
Yeah, I mean, internally we have lots of resources that can be used. I don't know if we have anything externally facing that for us to be able to use, but there are, you know, we'll have some social media posts that kind of come out that we'll be able to share. And then, but there's a lot of resources of, you know, online about the IPAS system. I mean, it's, you know, pretty much free for anyone to use. It's actually quite accessible for lots of folks.
Excellent. Well, we look forward to that too. And again, thank you so much for your time, Dr. Stone, Dr. Barr.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Thank you for all your hard work out there. Please continue to keep posting and sharing videos on DVM 360 Mag on Instagram and continue to stay connected with us here on the Vet Blast podcast. We will see you next week. Continue to stay pawsome, everybody. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the Vet Blast podcast with me, Dr. Adam Christman. Tune in next time. Remember, take care of your animals and always stay pawsome.